This episode of the Children's Literature Podcast is brought to you by you, the listeners.
I know we've said this 100 times, but thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Children's Literature Podcast. I'm your host, TQ Townsend.
And I'm your host, Chloe Townsend. This is our 100th episode mailbag.
So, Chloe, can you believe that we've made it to 100 episodes? The show's been on for almost 2 years, and I never thought we'd go this far, I have to be honest. What do you think?
I'm glad we've got this far. Let's keep going to 2,000,000.
I have a couple of really good questions from listeners that have come in, and the first two kind of go together. This one's from listener Kayla, and she wrote in to say, some books from the past have language or ideas that are not considered acceptable today by most people. What should be done with these books? Should they still be taught in schools? I think that's a very timely question, Kayla, so let's start with what Chloe thinks. So, Chloe, some books from a long time ago have words or ideas that people accepted, but now we know maybe they're not good. Sometimes they're slurs. Slurs are dirty, nasty words that are used to make fun of groups of people. And I'm happy to say you don't know most of these words. What do you think should be done with books that are really good books, really important books, books that can teach us a lot of things, but they also have some of these ideas from old times that we don't accept today?
Inside my school, there are reading levels for people inside our class. Those are rated best for my understanding. And right now, my favorite book series is all inside my reading level. So that was a bit lucky. And I think maybe they could be rated as well. I think that the teachers or parents should, like, explain before reading the book of what you should and should not say and, like, how old you should probably be to read the book.
I agree with that. There are books that have outdated ideas, but that means they're part of history. You can't change history. History is what happened. And I think it's better to know what really happened. And I think if you teach it right, it's for the better. Because if children understand that in the past people behaved badly and they understand why they behaved badly, I think they'll be less likely to behave badly in the future. What do you think?
Probably. I would probably agree with that.
I mean, there can be some books that I think are, they're intentionally provocative or they're intentionally vulgar. I don't know if books like that are going to be chosen to be read in school anyway, but just because a book is challenging or difficult or it shows uncomfortable parts of our past doesn't mean it shouldn't be read. In fact, it probably should be read. Sometimes you need to look at the past and go, wow, that was really messed up. Let's never do that again. This kind of leads into our next question, which is from listener Marion the Librarian. Lovely handle, Marion the Librarian. And she wrote in to say, there's a lot of debate around book bans right now. What do you think the solution is? So, Chloe, again, this is where I'll ask you first. There are books that some grown-ups think are just too dangerous for children to read. Either they have bad ideas or wrong ideas, or the grown-ups don't approve of the ideas that are in the book. And so they think there should be a list. And this list is books children should not be allowed to read. Do you think that grown-ups should make lists of books that just should not be read ever? And who should even get to make those sorts of choices?
I think, one, children should be able to read books because, like, what if eventually there's only one or two books in the world that children are only allowed to read and, like, a million that grown-ups are allowed to read? And also, the government shouldn't be able to choose unless the government had a child. But, like, I think that teachers and mostly parents and librarians should be able to choose, because like librarians know almost everything about books and teachers are teachers. They probably have read books out loud inside class, and parents, they just know what's best for their kid.
I have to say, I really agree with that. Parents know their children better than anyone else, so they're going to know what is and is not appropriate. So especially when choosing books for home, that's an easy one to decide. Also, teachers know who's in their class. I mean, there are some classes that shouldn't be given certain books, and there are some classes that absolutely should. So adults who actually know the children they're choosing the books for, that makes it easiest. I think another problem with this debate is that some people confuse the terms curation and censorship. Curation happens all the time. Curation is when an expert, like a librarian or a teacher or a parent or someone who runs a museum, they have to make choices about what to show and what not to show. You only have so much room. You only have so much time in the class. So you have to choose what you're going to read. And curating books that are appropriate for and interesting to children is not the same thing as censorship. Another thing I noticed from when I was a teenager, especially, from time to time, there'd be books where grownups would say, oh, you shouldn't read that book. It's dirty. It's bad. It's not good for you. It has terrible ideas. It'll turn you into a bad person. Honestly, I went out and I read that book just because a grownup told me not to. Like, there is this book called Catcher in the Rye that a bunch of grownups told me was dirty and nasty and it had bad words in it and terrible ideas and nobody should ever read it. And because I was like 15, I was like, yeah, right. Don't tell me what to do. So I went right out and I read it. And you know what? It was like a really dumb book. It wasn't even good. I hated it. No, it's about... Seriously. It's a...
I hit my head on the cardboard box. Help me.
Oh. So yeah, it's just about like this whiny rich kid who like runs around and complains about everyone and he calls people phonies all the time. And he's just kind of like a jerk and it was super boring and nothing happens. So the funny thing was, by telling me I couldn't read the book, it made me want to read it more. So I think that parents and teachers and anyone who would want to censor books maybe ought to think about that, is that by making books forbidden, you probably make them a little more desirable. And half the time, the books that get banned, they're kind of tedious. I found Lolita to be gross and boring and repetitive. I don't recommend it just because I think it's a bad book. It's edgy and shocking, but it's not a good book. I feel the same about books like Fight Club. That was another book that everyone said, oh, children shouldn't read that. Teenagers shouldn't read that. It'll turn them into little psychos. And it's like, it's actually not a very good book. I didn't enjoy it at all. So maybe by not making such a big deal out of controversial books, you might actually deflect attention from them. But even beyond that, if you try to make a list of banned books, you're going to spend forever trying to justify why this book should be allowed and this book should be not, and oh, this book is slightly too dirty, but that book's not dirty enough. What you really need are principles. If you're choosing a book for children to read, you need to think, is it age appropriate? Is it developmentally appropriate? Does it have stuff that parents could reasonably object to? Like, you know, we would prefer to discuss those topics in our own home with our child first. We don't want some third party introducing those ideas. That's all pretty reasonable. So I would advocate more principles of curation than outright censorship, if that makes sense. Thanks so much for writing in, Marion. Our next question is from listener Sunny. And Chloe, would you like to read it?
What's the best way to get little children ready to read? Probably my shot is just read to them. Like, just read to them. And once you've read the story, like, a couple of times, at least over a dozen times, make up breaks in the sentence. Say, the book had the cat ran. You can go the, and then they say cat, and then you say ran. And then eventually they're just reading nonstop without you even having to point out a word to them.
If you read to your kids, they will love reading. The best way to teach your children is to be involved with them, play with them, love them. I never taught my kids how to count. Chloe, how did you learn to count?
We were playing hide and seek. The most adorable thing is whenever my mom said, "Chloe, where are you?" I just jumped out and said, "I'm here! I'm here!"
No, it's true. My kids learn to count by playing hide and seek. If you count to 10, they'll learn to count to 10, and then you're having fun and you're interacting with each other and it costs nothing. My kids learned phonics from playing with alphabet blocks. Do you remember that, Chloe? We would take the little blocks and we would make like A-T, and then we would go at, and then I would ask you to find a letter C, and we would hunt for it, and then you would put it in front, and we would go k-at, cat. So we learned by playing together. We didn't have to spend a lot of money. We didn't have to buy a lot of fancy curriculum. We just spent time together. If you read to your kids, they will learn to read. They'll love reading and they'll be excited about it. I sometimes get frustrated with how many consumer products get pushed on parents, and you don't have to spend that kind of money. I've always loathed Baby Einstein videos. I mean, first of all, they don't actually make your kid any smarter. Listening to Mozart doesn't encourage neural development. It's very nice music, but it can't increase basic intelligence. We're all busy, and I have certainly let my kids watch slightly too much television at times when I was too busy or too exhausted to play with them. But don't let these companies trick you into paying for products that replace you. All of the stuff that happens in Baby Einstein videos are things that adults should be doing themselves for their kids. You can grab a sock puppet and entertain your baby and make funny sounds while xylophone music plays. Learning and development is an interactive process. TV shows and flashcards can't replicate a real relationship. Unless there's a really, really good reason to buy stuff like flashcards or learning software, save your money. Our next question is for you, Chloe, from listener Rob, who's a third grade teacher in America. He says, teachers often have to assign books for reading. Sometimes they're older classic books, which are really good, but it can be hard to get kids excited about reading an unfamiliar book. What are things teachers should and shouldn't do to try to convince students to be open-minded and give an unfamiliar story a try?
So the first thing that they should do is try reading the blurb out loud to the class. And if the child isn't really interested, then say, you can go to your desk and do whatever you want. And then just start reading it in an unfamiliar, louder voice. And then they'll soon just be like sneakily listening to it maybe. And then what you shouldn't do is like, oh, come on, give it a try. If you don't try it, then we'll have to find a different book and the whole class will be really disappointed and you'll get in big trouble.
That makes sense. So don't apply a lot of pressure. Just maybe try to hook them with an interesting introduction.
Yeah.
Good advice. Good luck, Rob. This next question is for me from listener Sherry. She writes, I just listened to your episode about sense and sensibility and teenagers, and I was shocked by the fact that I never thought about the fact that Marianne and Eleanor Dashwood are just teenagers. They seem so grown up because of the old-fashioned language in the book and because they both get married. It's the same in Pride and Prejudice, where the youngest girl gets married and she's only 16. How do Jane Austen's books represent and not represent teenage life today? You raise a good point, Sherry, because I think teenagers reading Jane Austen's book ought to think about the ways in which they are similar to and different from the characters in the stories. High schoolers might be the same age as characters like Marianne Dashwood, Lydia Bennet, Kitty Bennet, and Catherine Morland, but none of these girls would have used the word teenager to describe themselves. Teenage is a word that emerged in the 1950s, as longer lifespans and increasing educational requirements meant that young people were allowed more time to finish growing up. Back in Jane Austen's time, once a girl was out in society, meaning she was allowed to attend grown-up dinner parties, public and private balls, and be courted for marriage, she counted as an adult. Young women and young men were still expected to obey their parents while they were financially and socially dependent on them, but essentially, once someone was out in society, they had entered the adult world. There were no laws against a guy in his 30s, 40s, or even 50s marrying a teenage girl. Although the wider the age difference was, the more likely it was to be frowned on by society or forbidden by the girl's parents. We can see an example of this in Sense and Sensibility. Colonel Brandon stresses out a lot about the age difference between himself and Marianne Dashwood. When the couple finally marry, he's 35 and she's 16. The way the age difference is treated by Austin suggests that this is about as far as an age difference can go before it starts to gross people out. Today, such an age difference would be considered shocking, and a man in his 30s who tried to date a teenager would quite rightly go to jail. Topics like parties, gossip, friendship, romance, and family relationships are very relatable to modern teens, although, of course, today most teenagers are thinking about dating rather than marriage. The way that the younger Bennett sisters react to militia officers arriving in the village is no different from how modern girls might crush on a new guy at school who's super hot and awesome at football. Mean girls like Caroline Bingley or Lucy Steele will be very recognizable to anyone who survived high school. Mr. Darcy's letter to Elizabeth Bennet isn't that different from the petty missives that back in my day were elaborately folded and secretly passed in math class. Do kids still pass notes?
Sometimes, but teenagers text in class.
I want to revisit Jane Austen's books next year, and your question's given me some interesting ideas to work on. Thanks for writing in, Sherry. Our last question is from a listener who goes by the name of Donkey Kong. He or she asks, what are your favorite movies and books that you don't read or watch for the show?
So, my first thing to say, I love your name. Second thing, I love the Rainbow Magic series by Daisy Meadows. We haven't talked about the whole Princess in Black series, but we've talked about most of the books. We haven't talked about the Super Mario Bros. Your name just reminded me of it. The American Girl doll books, my favorite so far is the Samantha ones. The last one, it's actually four movies, Toy Story.
Some of my choices of books and movies might surprise you, because, you know, given that this is a show about children's literature, you might think I mostly read kids' books and watch rom-coms. As far as novels, I really, really love Westerns. I grew up reading a lot of Louis L'Amour novels, and I still come back to them and just love them. Not just his Westerns. He has some that are set in the colonial era of the United States. I like Bernard Cornwell's novels about medieval England. I really, really love the Cormoran Strike detective series that's written by J.K. Rowling using the pseudonym Robert Galbraith. As far as movies, the ones that I watch over and over again and that have stuck with me for a really long time tend to be older movies. I really, really love The Adventures of Robin Hood starring Errol Flynn. Every time I watch it, it's just such a spectacle. The costumes are just so detailed and amazing. And how athletic and energetic Errol Flynn is, you can't help but be amazed. Other movies I really enjoy are The Terminator, the Rocky series, Blazing Saddles. As far as television shows, I watched a lot of sci-fi growing up. I was a fan of the original Star Trek series, as well as Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. Voyager, sort of. That one was a bit more hit or miss. I didn't really care for Enterprise very much. And Chloe and I have been rediscovering some old TV shows from the 90s. We recently started rewatching old episodes of Home Improvement, which,
yay!
It holds up. It's funny. It does have a good theme song. Thanks for asking, Donkey Kong. I wanted to finish up with a letter that I recently got from a new listener. This came in from Deborah Sett in Wisconsin, and she wrote to say, since 2022, it's been my goal to read or reread children's literature. I'm enjoying this so much more than I ever thought I would. I'm not an educator, just a grandmother in her 70s who started to realize what precious gems these books are. I discovered your podcast about 2 months ago and have been catching up on earlier episodes. The two books I recently finished, thanks to your discussions, were the original Pinocchio and Bambi. After hearing you discuss how dark Bambi was, I knew I had to get to the true story. Thank you for bringing these books to our attention. I really, really appreciated that message from Deb, because you don't have to be a child to appreciate how good children's literature is. You don't have to be a teacher. You don't have to be an expert. You just have to be someone who's interested in ideas and someone who cares about stories. Thank you so much for coming along with us on this journey to 100 episodes. Here's to 100 more. What books do you want to talk about next year, Chloe?
I want to talk about Peter Pan, The Little Princess, Anne of Green Gables, more Pippi Longstocking, Daisy Meadows, all the Princess and Black series, Ramona books, stories I've written, more stories.
I think we're going to need more than 100 more episodes, huh?
Yeah.
You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Please subscribe and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters at childrensliteraturepodcast.com. We're your hosts, TQ Townsend
and Chloe Townsend.
Thanks for listening.